Next case is State of Ohio versus Terry White, 03-1048-1049. Mr. Hardwick.
May it please the court. Good morning, Your Honors. The General Assembly has recognized that it just isn't cost-effective to try to get blood from a turnip. And that's one of the reasons why Section 2949.14 makes sense, because it only authorizes the recovery of court costs from non-indigent defendants and defendants who are non-indigent at the time of conviction. When read in pari materia with Section 2947.23, a trial court can only impose costs on defendants who are indigent at the time of conviction. Now, these two statutes should be read together because they both concern the same subject matter, which is the recovery of costs from indigent defendants.
The Court of Appeals seems to suggest that the statute with respect to the clerk's ability to collect would not bar the clerk from collecting from one who was indigent and then no longer was indigent, had assets.
Well, yes, they said that, but that holding ignores the language of 2949.14 that freezes in time the indigency status at the time of conviction and ignores the six words at the beginning of that statute, which are upon the conviction of a non-indigent defendant. Now, it is not patently unreasonable to separate the two statutes, but even if you separate the two statutes, Mr. White still wins because he was indigent at the time of conviction. So even if the Court of Appeals correctly separated him, Mr. White still wins because in the sentencing entry, the court found that he had been found to be indigent. And 3 days later, he filed an affidavit of indigency that showed zero assets and zero income. Now, it's hard to get more indigent than zero assets and zero income, and his indigency has never been contested by the state in this litigation. Now, for the state to win in this case, there has to be a violation of four rules of statutory construction. As I first discussed, the doctrine of impari materia applies because these statutes concern the same subject. As I've also just discussed, the courts have to give meaning to all words in a statute, and the state and the Court of Appeals opinion does not give meaning to the words upon the conviction of a non-indigent person. Also, it would violate the doctrine, and I'm not going to use the Latin here because I'm afraid I'd mispronounce it, that the inclusion of one thing excludes all others. And here there's a statute that expressly states gives a way to collect court costs, a way to impose and collect court costs from non-indigent defendants. There is no parallel statute for how to collect them from indigent defendants. And this court should give meaning to the legislature's decision to only provide a means of certification and collection from non-indigent defendants. And finally, as the Court of Appeals has noted, the specific controls over the general. We have a general statute in Section 2947.23, which involves the imposition of court costs generally, but we have a very specific provision about what to do, how to deal with someone's indigency status or lack thereof, and that's 2949.14. And the specific provisions of 2949.14 should be given preference over the more general rules of 2947.23. The legislature's distinction makes sense for a number of reasons that I haven't gotten to yet. There's only so much burden that the courts and the justice system can place on indigent defendants. We want these folks to become productive members of society again. If we start adding court costs to fines, to probation fees, to sex offender registration fees, it makes it very difficult for someone to go out and live an honest living and to integrate themselves into society. So it makes sense that the legislature says, okay, you can't afford to pay, you're indigent, you do your time, you serve your probation, then go back and become a member of society. Also, making the indigency determination as 29.
So that's an interesting little argument. You don't have opposing counsel, so amuse us a little. Are you suggesting that it encourages people to go out and not make an honest living in order to pay their court costs?
It makes it one more burden, one more way that they can be violated for their community control, violated for their post-release control. A standard term of community control and post-release control in the state is the payment of court costs.
Okay, I mean, you really think people are going to go out and steal just so they can pay their court costs? That seems improbable to me.
Not that they would steal, it's not necessarily that they would steal to pay their court costs, but it would be one more way that they could be violated and sent back, one more way that makes it harder for them to stay on the outside.
Couldn't it be looked at as an incentive to get a job so you could pay your court costs and then have some closure to your criminal activity?
Yeah, that is one way to look at it, Your Honor. I'm trying to find a reason why would the trying to give some rational basis to show that the legislature, why they would not put this burden on indigent defendants, why they would place it only on non-indigent defendants. And because we could expect the Martha Stewarts of the world to pay your court costs. We shouldn't expect someone who has zero income, zero liabilities to pay their court costs. That's just not realistic. And if perhaps possibly even more, I think, a more compelling policy rule to look at the indigency only at the time of conviction is that this is a time when everyone is looking at the defendant's financial situation. It promotes finality, and it promotes accuracy. Defendant already has appointed counsel. We're looking at the financial situation for whether they can be appointed counsel, whether they can pay the fines, whether they can pay the mandatory fine. Mr. White's case, the reason he filed the indigency affidavit right about the time of sentencing is for the waiver of the mandatory fine.
At the time that indigency is determined, is there an assessment of possible future assets that may come to the indigent defendant? He may be indigent today, but there may be an estate. He may be the beneficiary of an estate or whatever. Is that?
Well, if he actually had the asset at the time, then that should go on the affidavit of indigency. And if he lies on his affidavit of indigency, then he can be punished for perjury.
A future interest is not determined.
Correct. Future interest. Unless that future interest is somehow already vested. If they have a rich uncle who hasn't died yet and they're in the will, well, that's not good enough. If they have some sort of springing property interest in something, well, that should be on their affidavit of indigency.
What about community service? Can that be considered at time of sentencing when they're indigent?
I don't think I understand.
2947.23 talks about indigents doing community service in lieu of payment of costs.
Well, that, I guess
you're familiar with that.
That could be a consideration, although Mr. White was sent to prison for 7 months. Mm-hmm. There may be some constitutional problems with.
That's what I was getting at.
Forcing someone.
See something wrong with that?
Yeah,
although it's in the statute that they can do that.
Counsel, again, we're handicapped by your opposition not being here and there not being many facts that we have. What's going on in the real world on a daily basis on these matters? Are costs being assessed against indigents? I mean, you point out the first part of the statute is pretty specific in terms of what it tells the clerk they may collect. The other statute allows the judge to assess it, right?
Yeah, that, on its face, when read by itself, yes.
All right. And you're asking us to hold the judge can't even assess it, rather than, I mean, you could get the same practical result by saying the clerk doesn't have any authority to collect it.
In theory, Your Honor, that is correct. And part of the problem that the criminal defendants have faced is that when they come back and try to challenge collection, it's happened in the second and also the 10th district, and the cases are cited in my brief, that they're told, well, the res judicata bars you from attacking it. Now, I don't think that's a proper bar. I think those decisions are incorrect, but they have a difficulty in challenging that at a later basis. It makes much more sense to do it all at once.
So clerks are trying, in your view, illegally to collect.
Correct.
Something that they don't have statutory authority to collect.
Correct, Your Honor. And it also varies from district to district. In most courts now, in the 4th district where Clark came out of, court costs aren't even being imposed. I do know what, I've heard of one county common police court judge who decided in the fourth district who says under the new reporting rules, there's no such thing as a binding opinion, therefore I'm gonna keep imposing them anyway. But for the most part in the fourth, they've stopped. I've had letters from clerk's offices about $49 court cost bills trying to collect.
That earlier statement, we have a trial judge who says under our new reporting rules, he's no longer bound by any appellate decision of his appellate district.
Right, that distinction, that binding versus non-binding, that the new rules say that all opinions shall be given towards the effect of whatever someone thinks they should be given. And his opinion is that the new reporting rules make them non-binding. If you don't like it, you can appeal. And what I'm saying also goes to show what I just talked about, the finality, what everyone's looking at, and the race judicata question also goes towards showing why we should look at only an indigency at the time of conviction, because if a defendant is wrongly assessed court costs at the time of conviction and was in fact indigent, he or she has the right to appeal. They have appointed counsel, just like Mr. White did. They can appeal and resolve the issue once and for all, whereas if under the Court of Appeals ruling, this is an issue that remains open for years, subject to litigation for years on end, and it can be brought up over and over again, and it becomes inefficient. And if we force people to litigate the indigency status as they go along, that actually opens the door for lots of litigation. And that means that every inmate in prison now is no longer bound by res judicata and can challenge the collection of court costs, arguing that they're currently indigent. It also creates a nice bright line rule that's easy for everyone to follow. You look at it, is indigent or not, then we move on. We don't waste taxpayer, most of these cases, collection and defense are all done at taxpayer expense. This avoids the taxpayer spending the equivalent of sending out a 37-cent stamp to collect a 25-cent bill. On the certified question, and there's one important point on the certified question that wasn't addressed by the Court of Appeals, because it wasn't at issue in this case, but since this case can't affect other cases, and this court is making rules that could affect other cases, the certified question asks, may a court impose costs on an indigent defendant? We respectfully say the answer is no. If this court disagrees and says yes, ask that this court scrupulously stick to the word may, because there is a dispute between the second and the third district right now about whether a trial court has the right to waive the imposition of court costs. Section 2949.092 says that certain court costs can be waived only if all court costs can be waived. The second district has said that this means that a trial court has the discretion to waive court costs. That issue has to be raised by the trial attorney in the trial court.
Counselor, is there a uniform definition of indigency in all 88 counties that they are using for example, their eligibility for a public defender? How is that?
Well, I know for public defense, for what they're eligible for appointment of counsel, that's in the Ohio Administrative Code in Section 120. I can't give you the exact cite off the top of my head, but it's in Section 120, which is the public defender statute. I believe it's 125% of the poverty level.
Okay, so that is the baseline or the maximum, I would imagine, of income that you're allowed to have to be able to access a public defender.
That's, I believe, that's a presumptive level. If you go above that, a certain amount above that, it becomes less clear, it becomes more arguable. You can argue that you're entitled to it.
But then there is the declaration of assets that have to be done, because we're talking about income there. When the judge makes the inquiry for the purposes of the imposition of costs or fines.
Correct.
And that, I mean, just because they have a public defender doesn't mean that they meet the criteria then for the indigency status for the purposes of costs.
Right, Your Honor, although fortunately, that is possibly correct, but fortunately in this case we have facts that make it easier to make the decision, because we have 3 days after sentencing an indigency affidavit which is uncontested, which says zero income, zero assets. And that when you get zero, it makes it a nice, easy case for an appellate court to review and make law, and can leave for another day if this court wants to, what exactly is indigency for the purposes of paying court costs. Your Honor, in the absence of any other questions, the General Assembly made a rational policy decision only to authorize the collection of court costs for non-indigent defendants, and therefore, by implication, to exclude the recovery of court costs from indigent defendants. I ask this court to reverse the decision of the Court of Appeals.
Thank you, Mr. Hardwick. The appellee has waived oral argument. I have not filed a brief. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion. The marshal, please adjourn the court.